We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a poster about a missing pet, read by Zeb Soames.
Our much-loved pet duck has gone missing and we're desperate for his safe return. Last seen on Wednesday near the Toby Carvery.
Our thanks to Phil Chapman for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Katie Brand. And opposite them on my left, stand-up comedian Lloyd Langford and Susan Kalman. Andy, whose Brexit plans are all white?
Well, it's been a historic week in Westminster. And, of course, Wednesday was a momentous day for parliamentary democracy when hundreds of MPs voted for something they don't believe in. which isn't, you know, that isn't necessarily new. I mean, historically, of course, you know, MPs have often voted against their conscience, but they don't usually let on. You know, usually they like to keep that stuff secret, but this time there were, you know, they weren't secretly nobbled by lobbyists from the arms industry or bribed by a foreign businessman. This time they just kind of succumbed to the political realities of the referendum. And the debate was, well, actually, it wasn't really a debate. It was more like a hostage situation. the debate was a bit dispiriting. And at the end, I watched all the Remain, or most of the Remain MPs trooping obediently through the eyes lobby, looking like the Night of the Living Dead. But I did try to follow the debate. Mrs. May said it was time to trust the British people. Now, I think if she spent more time with them, she'd know that was a bad idea. But there were some lively contributions. Ken Clark, in his new capacity as Her Majesty's official opposition,
him and Gary Lineker.
That's right, yeah. He made a speech where he said that the referendum was a stupid idea and they shouldn't feel bound by it. And then he said that if Enoch Powell was alive today, he'd probably regard Theresa May as a racist. I mean, I'm summarising. Yeah. It was quite a long speech. George Osborne, remember him? Sure. No. He made this very kind of codified speech, and someone called the Tories bastards just to show willing. I mean, really. And anyway, I mean, the upshot of it all is there is still a tiny minority of Remainers hanging on in there, just, I think, clutching at straws, living in the tinsel hope that maybe, I don't know, maybe there'll be a snap election and the Lib Dems will romp to victory. Or maybe, you know, in some moment of glorious incompetence, Boris will get distracted by a woman and inadvertently trigger Article 49.
I've spent nothing all day doing, apart from the white paper, which was fascinating, because they mistakenly said we were all going to get
14
weeks paid holidays by mistake. Now, the government have said it, we should all demand it, as far as I'm concerned.
It was essentially a speech that she'd already given, just sort of then transcribed, put on this thing. It says things like, the precise form of this new agreement will be the subject of negotiation. It was, I think it's fair to say, pretty vague. It had the sort of whiff of a hurried sixth form project.
Someone had done a collage of what Brexit means. Theresa May's done a mood board of how she wants everything to be.
Now, Brexit vote will have on lots that. Of natural fabrics.
Yes, there's lots of purple, there's no blue and yellow. Have a look at that and vote on it.
It just felt to me like delaying the inevitable. Like, you know, when you have a meal in a restaurant and you ask them for the bill and then they bring the bill over. And then you go, and now you'll have to go and get the card machine. It was that bit. We're at the bit where we're waiting for them to bring the card machine. Going, why don't you already have the card machine on some sort of holster?
A holster?
Yeah, you know.
A holster?
Like a cowboy for electronic payment.
Just...
It's troubling for me because I don't deny that I live in a social media echo chamber, but I have found a recurring theme that I share, which is the guilty crush on Ken Clark. Does anyone share this? I've had it for quite a while
bit,
now.
Yeah.
Do you? Yeah. He's quite sort of hot, Ken Clark, isn't he? And his contribution to the Brexit debate did nothing to dissuade my ardour.
It was quite fascinating, though, the Labour position as well, because Diane Abbott became ill and so couldn't vote. And there have been a lot of conspiracy theories about this. And
she had a very serious illness, apparently.
She had a migraine.
I thought her spine had disappeared.
No.
Where was Diane Abbott alleged to have been the night before?
Apparently she'd been out for a drink the night before.
Hence the migraine.
Hence the migraine. If you suffer from migraines, you know certain drinks do set you off, especially anything with alcohol in them.
I'm sorry if she genuinely is ill, but it sort of smacked of the kind of ill I used to get when I discovered we were doing cross-country in PE.
Effectively, this is the news that the government have launched a Brexit white paper after the House of Commons passed a bill to enact Article 50. Yes, Brexit is in motion. It's much like when you have your first pint of the evening. You're already past the point of no return. You're in this for the duration, and you'll have to face the consequences, be they a renegotiation of trade deals or merely the act of vomiting exuberantly into the lap of a stranger. The white paper outlines a 12-step plan for Brexit, the first step of which is admitting that you have a problem. The white paper was presented to the House of Commons by David Davis, those lucky blighters. I saw him give his Cyrano de Bergerac in Northampton in 1993, and let me tell you, it was life-changing. I've not been in a theatre since. Ken Clark was the only Conservative MP to vote against the bill, although, to be honest, Ken's whole attitude to being a Conservative MP is rather like someone who's given their notice in and sees no obligation to turn up for the rest of the month in trousers. Two points to Andy. Katie, who's been coy about someone else's travel plans?
Oh, well, this is the recent story of Donald Trump and his executive order banning travel from 7 countries where the predominant population believe in Islam. And our government's very, very slow response, or rather Theresa May specifically, her very slow response in what many people, I think, really thought she should denounce it very fast. So the Donald Trump thing, it's just, I can't believe the fact that we're only in week 2. I mean, it feels like it's been going on forever, and I don't want to watch anymore, but I can't look away. It's like when I once saw a shaman feed the blood of a goat to fairies, and it feels like that, sort of like I want to laugh. I want to laugh, but I'm just quite frightened. Like, that's what it feels like.
I feel this deserves to be unpacked a little.
Oh, okay, sure.
Where and when precisely did this event happen?
The shaman or Donald Trump? The shaman.
The shaman, was, the more was, understandable of the two.
It was... with the more concrete belief system. It was in a very rural part of Pakistan. And some villagers decided that they were going to put on a ceremony where they invited the local shaman.
Ooh, anybody else have a gap here?
That was just, to me, that's light relief from what's going on in the world at the moment, to be honest. Theresa May didn't respond very promptly. I sort of feel like she has this very sheepish look about her. And she held his hand, didn't she, a few days earlier? Well, apparently because he's too scared to go downstairs. But she sort of came back with this big issue and invited him very hastily to a state visit, which has caused her big problems. And now she's been called Theresa the Appeaser. And there's been this huge petition to stop him coming to meet the Queen, which would really annoy him because he's obsessed with the Queen, I think. But yeah, Theresa the Appeaser is going to stick, I think. I like to think of her as Tautology Theresa, because she just says Brexit means Brexit all the time, and she means immigration, Trump means Trump, America means America. I think in the end she's just going to be found in a corner rocking going, Theresa means Theresa, Theresa means Theresa.
And now she's got this very toxic state visit to sort out. I mean, there is no official date has been set for the visit, which is a shame, really, because if they had chosen a date, then it would be a lot easier for the Queen to pretend that she'd accidentally double-booked herself. That would be the easy... Well, that's what you do, wouldn't it? You should just say, I'm so sorry, I'm visiting Wales. Philip forgot to put it on the calendar.
I don't think we should ban him. I think he should come here. I think he should fly in on Air Force One, and then he should be refused at immigration because we don't allow people with extremist views into the country.
I think the fear of stairs could be the key.
Yes. Yes.
I think what we do, because it'd be far more tactful to get him to back out, what we do is we send him an itinerary composed exclusively of visits to lighthouses.
Yes.
But even just getting out and down the stairs out of the aeroplane, will he just use the inflatable slide, I suppose?
I also think calling it, like, the special relationship, it's just, it's such a misnomer. Like, they broke up with us in 1776. We're like the needy ex sort of hanging them.
I mean, what I've noticed this week is that the commentators are starting to run out of euphemisms, because up until now they've been using words like unpredictable, maverick, the great disruptor. It's as if nobody wants to admit to themselves just how mad he really is. And I don't mean mad in conversational usage, you know, like you say, oh, you should meet my mate Dave, he's really mad. No, I mean mad. He's now fulfilling every criteria. He sees things that aren't there, like 2 million people at his inauguration, like 3 million illegals who voted for Hillary. He hears voices all the time. He has an imaginary friend called Many People Are Saying.
Admirably, this is Theresa May's reaction to the travel ban instituted by President Donald Trump. May initially failed to condemn the ban following her visit to Washington, although perhaps that's understandable, given that she was probably suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, the inevitable consequence of spending 48 hours buttering up a sex pest. More than 1.8 million people signed a petition to prevent Donald Trump from making a state visit to the United Kingdom. Luckily, if we know one thing about petitions, it's that they really are the way to get things done. Frankly, I'm surprised there's even time for a state visit, what with the sacking of Jeremy Hunt, the legalisation of cannabis and the reintroduction of the brand name Opal Fruits, all so very imminent. This is not the first controversial state visit. Robert Mugabe visited the Queen in 1994, Vladimir Putin in 2003, the King of Saudi Arabia in 2007, and then, of course, there was the racially insensitive son of Princess Alice of Battenberg, who visited the palace in 1947 and is still yet to leave. Also this week, President Trump nominated a new Supreme Court judge, Neil Gorsuch, a man who, according to the Daily Mail, founded the Fascism Forever Club at his elite Washington high school, showing that the Trump train keeps on running with all the focus and finesse of a Brio train set in the custard-smeared fists of a four-year-old with what will soon be diagnosed as anger issues. 2 points to Katie. Lloyd, whose holiday plans reign supreme?
This is a gentleman who took his daughter on holiday during term time, and he was fined, I think, by his local council, and then it was taken to a magistrate's court and they overturned the fine, and then it was taken to a higher court and now they overturned it as well, and now it's been taken to the Supreme Court. So he's a gentleman from the Isle of Wight. So, and they went to, I think they went to Walt Disney World. So it was less of a holiday and more a sort of break for freedom. So apparently you're only allowed to take your child out of school if it's exceptional circumstances, which I thought, I mean, she met Mickey Mouse. Fair enough. I'm 33 and I've never met Mickey Mouse.
I saw him on the news, and he's obviously somebody who's good at finding a principle that he wants to contest, and he said that that the law says that he has to send his child to school regularly, and he looked it up in the dictionary, and regularly means often. Yeah. Well, regularly doesn't mean often. Mm. So if that's the level of homeschooling that child can expect, but why didn't he just do what any normal parent would do and lie?
Yes.
You just you just brief your kid, you say, okay, listen, if anyone asks, you've been off sick for a week with a very rare form of jaundice, and that's why you've got this lovely tan.
Yeah. It's got really quite serious implications, though, for the proportion of us who've made the decision not to have children because we want to have a life, which is I enjoy going on holiday any time I want, apart from when the schools are on holiday, because then I won't encounter any children.
You'll have Disney World to yourself.
Just absolutely. Me and Mickey Mouse just having it large. He's a bit of a disappointment, just to let you know. And
is he worryingly tall?
Yeah. Mm. Hello, Susan Sharp. So, and I like to sit and have a nice holiday without any children. And now people will be like, oh, I need to take my children away. And I'll be sitting there going, why are there all these children here? And I'll be shouting, why are they not at school? And I'll end up being banned from another country. So I think it's bad. When I was growing up, you only went on holiday during school holidays. So, do you know, I hate to be harsh, but suck it up, parents. It was your decision.
Yeah. I also think there should be, like, an element of leeway. So if you've got an intelligent child that is regularly... regularly has great attendance,
yeah,
then they can go on holiday during term time. If your kid's thick, then they should say, no, to be honest, they need to be here as much as they can.
This is the sort of logical conclusion of streaming or whatever. You've got the top set just never there. They're always at Disney World.
That did used to be the system. This isn't sort of how it's always been. This is quite recent. Michael Gove brought this in before. Mm. It was exactly that, that head teachers had the discretion to give up to a fortnight for kids to go on holidays or do exceptional things or whatever, however they couched it in whatever nice terms. But that's effectively what happened. The head teachers would say, you're clever, you can go to the Dordoin. You're not clever. You're going to have to stay here as a punishment with the
sandpit.
Yes, in the sandpit. But to be honest, I am very much in your camp. I just lie.
Mm. Well, you never know how sort of rigorous...
Is that right? Is that the right way to bring up children? No. It feels right.
They will have to lie in their lives at some point,
yes,
won't they?
This is horrific to listen to. Listen, I have a thing called plausible deniability. As long as I've got plausible deniability, I'll pretty much do anything.
I never know how sort of rigorous schools are. If we arrive late at school, we have to, you know, the children get up to the classroom, and then we have to sort of sign a book. But I don't know, saying which child is late, what time they've been late, and then you have to give the reasons for lateness. But they never ever come back to you. So I always try and write more and more ridiculous things to see if they get to a point when they actually go, I'm sorry, I've just been reading your form or whatever. And you know, we put things like reasons for lateness, parental incompetence or inadequate planning, just one of those days. Daddy's head has been hurting a lot this morning. We're all incredibly sluggish after a heavy breakfast. What do I have to write for them to come back and query it? Contagiously, this is the UK Supreme Court, who this week have been asked to rule on whether parents can take their children out of school in term time. Yes, the American Supreme Court gets abortion, gun control and religious freedom, while our one gets to deal with the school holidays. It's like the difference between CSI and Hetty Wainthrop Investigates. They're different and ours is better. Parent John Platt took his daughter out of school in term time to go to Disney World. Of course, if you're planning a visit to Florida, you now have to take your children out of school for even longer to cover the 3 days of forced detention when a border guard decides your six-year-old daughter looks a bit Iraqi. Regardless of the final ruling, I should remind listeners that it remains legally dubious to take other people's children out of school. Also this week, a primary school in Derbyshire announced that children will be allowed to wear slippers to classes because teachers believe a relaxed approach to footwear improves academic results. And who can argue? Aristotle famously wore sandals, Einstein refused to wear socks, and the late Bertrand Russell never wrote a treatise without slipping into his trademark Uggs. Primary schools are now encouraging children to wear slippers in class. The move is a precursor to other initiatives, such as the introduction of pipes, the introduction of smoking jackets, and finally the introduction of sitting in large leather chairs, sipping whiskey and staring into the fireplace, reminiscing about lost loves and the hell of war. 2 points to Lloyd. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Katie have 4, and so too do Lloyd and Susan. We start round two with a notice spotted in a branch of Oxfam.
Would the person who took the ladder yesterday please bring it back, or further steps will be taken?
Thanks to Sheila Laverick in Formby for sending us that. Andy, qui est dans la merde politique?
Yeah, That was very good.
Many thanks.
Very good. It was like I was on the, you know, in Paris, on the left bank somewhere.
Mercy.
They're having an election in France in 3 months' time, and the one of the candidates, the sort of centre-right candidate, François Fillon, is in a spot of bother because he has been accused of making quite significant payments to his British-born wife, Penelope, and the accusation is that he was paying her for a fake job as his assistant. And so he's absolutely adamant that she did have a proper job, that she used to go and work in the parliamentary building. His case would be a bit stronger if she had an entry pass. That's awkward. And his case would look stronger still if he hadn't also employed his two children as legal advisers, even though they hadn't actually passed their exams at the time. If they'd been further along their law course, they might have been able to advise him about possible fraud. But so anyway, he's in a lot of trouble, and it looks like he's fatally wounded. I mean, the polls are saying, when have they ever been wrong? They're saying that he'd get knocked out in the first round, and now the runners and riders are, well, on the left, you have a man called Benoît Hamon, who commentators are likening to Jeremy Corbyn, because he doesn't stand a chance. but he's actually got some quite interesting policies, including a tax on robots. Sure. I think he's a little bit behind the curve there, because, you know, modern robot technology is so advanced now that the robots are easily intelligent enough to master tax evasion. I am a registered charity, so I don't think that's going to work. And then, of course, you've got Macron, who's the sort of new darling, sort of centrist. You've got Le Pen on the far right. It's looking like Le Pen might win the first round, but would probably get rejected in the second round, which is this brilliant system that the French have for elections. They have the first round, and then they all get to go, oh, mon Dieu, what have you done? And they change their minds. And if we'd had the capacity to do that, there would be so many things that could be changed. But
like the idea of, like, a French system, like, maybe the way they run Love Lives, where it's kind of like you have the one you married and then you sort of change your mind a bit, so you have another one on the side. Like, we could all have sort of our political systems run like that, couldn't we? Hmm. Sort of, you know, a leader for a bit, and then when you get bored of them, you just go around and have a bit of sexy time with another leader for a couple of days.
do you go back to the original leader?
Yeah, you might go back to the original leader, yeah. I mean, it might work, wouldn't it? Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May. No, it's not going to work.
Do you clock into sexy time? Is it sort of a bit like flexi time? Yeah. Oh, I can't come in, I'm on sexy time.
We're on sexy time this weekend. Yeah.
Sexy. Do you know where she's from, his wife?
Yeah, she's from Wales.
That's right.
Penelope, from Wales. I mean, I don't think that's relevant, Miles, to the corruption.
I was just wondering how unlikely it is that she's doing nothing. I mean, Lloyd, the Welsh, they have a famous work ethic. I mean, do you think it's been just completely crushed out of her by living amongst the French?
I was wondering which way that racism was going to go.
I wasn't.
I don't know her surname. They keep saying Penelope Gate, but I think that's like Watergate, right?
Yeah.
Penelope Gates, it sounds elegant.
We don't know that she was doing nothing, even if she was at home the whole time.
I mean, this guy,
he might be completely hopeless. If it wasn't for her, he might never get to, you know, work with his trousers on the right way round. I mean, he might be absolutely dependent.
It was 900,000 euros, though, that she was paid.
Well, he might really get through trousers.
There's also the issue of she was paid for two articles. To write two articles, and the slightly damning evidence against her is that there are no articles that have been written, I think, possibly.
I know the feeling.
But, I mean, I think, you know, it's very difficult, you know, talking about fake news and everything. There's already a lot of lies and deception going on in that campaign. For instance, it turns out that Marine Le Pen isn't actually a Marine.
Or a Pen.
No, she's done no military service whatsoever.
Oxymoronically, this is the scandal engulfing French presidential candidate François Fillon, who has been accused of paying his wife Penelope hundreds of thousands of euros of public money for work she may not have done. The story broke in French satirical magazine Le Canard Enchaîné, a publication I cannot recommend enough. Last week there was a wicked piece about municipal planning permission in Brittany that was beyond hilarious. True satirique, really stuck it to Le Homme. François Fillon's wife, Penelope, is Welsh-born, and as a man with a Welsh wife, I must say that you have to expect these things when you marry into criminality. That might make News Quiz Extra.
We've got a spare room tonight.
Let us hope that this doesn't lead to a deterioration in Welsh-French relations. We do not want to go back to the dark days of the Croque Monsieur Rarebit standoff of the late 80s. Of course, the French have a different electoral system to us. They have a series of primaries and a final runoff, whereas we simplify things and just have a single Conservative victory. I miss the good old days when a French political scandal involved at least three mistresses, a decapitation and a cheese course. You may find all of this rather irrelevant, but it's question one on our Parisian sister show, Zoutalore, Ouais le News. Deux points à Andy. Andy, deux points, 2 points to Andy. Katie, have a listen to this. Katie, where are fares to get fairer?
This is our completely bonkers railway system, I believe, which I find baffling on a daily basis. I live outside of London, so I come in on the train a lot, and I don't understand it. I feel like I have to have a PhD just to buy a ticket. And you go sort of to the machine and it comes down, a drop-down menu of 15 different tickets that are all worded very slightly differently and different prices. And I tried to buy a ticket online on one of those price-slashing websites and I looked down and there were 20 different ticket options for just one journey from Basingstoke to Waterloo. The top three were described in exactly the same terms and were all different prices by 30p each. I was like, can we just have one price for one journey and just sort of leave it at that? Because I honestly, it's some of the sort of weird barter system that we've got in this country. Whenever I see anyone from another country on our trains trying to figure it out, I just want to creep over and go, sorry. Is there any way I can help? But yeah, I don't. Sometimes I feel like the trains are run like a sort of the first round apprentice task. Where like Alan Sugar's gone, I've laid on a rail network franchise. Your job is to run it without destroying the working lives of millions of commuters. Oh, 5 minutes later, you're fired. I mean, it's ridiculous. They said one of the statements was, we would like to bring the ticketing system into line with new technology. It's like, what was an abacus? A calculator? Like, forget the newest technology. Let's just sort of make it make sense across the board. Then they said, oh, the machines are very complicated to use. We're gonna make machines easier to use and we're gonna trial it in one tiny area in like Northumberland. It's like, don't trial it, just roll it out. Just make the machines easier to use. It's completely mad. The whole thing's mad. On one of the trains I get, they have these secret squirrel stops, which aren't real stops, where they'll say, the guard will come over and say, the first stop on this train is Woking, but we will be stopping at Clapham Junction, an unscheduled stop, just to pick passengers up. That kind of sounds like a stop to me. Just prevent people from getting up.
Do like, not get off at Clapham. Yeah.
It's like sort of fake news. It's like, I'm pretty sure we've stopped at Clapham Junction and all the doors are open. It's like, nope. No, we haven't.
In Wales, you sometimes have stops that they'll only stop at if you ask them nicely.
Are they called a halt or something like that, isn't it?
Is it the request stops? Yeah. You have to, when you get on, you have to find the guard and say, I'd really like to get off here, and they go, maybe. maybe no. I've been quoted for tickets to places in the United Kingdom that cost more than the last holiday I had to Italy. I genuinely, £450. And then if you go on and you do all the journeys individually, it's maybe £100. And it is absolutely ridiculous. It is fleecing us dry for a network which barely works at times. As soon as it rains, the whole West Coast mainline goes down because there's a puddle in Oxenholme. And you can't get the train over it because heaven forbid a train would go over a puddle.
But is this system about to change? That's the point.
I don't know. I hope so. About 3 years ago, I was on tour, and my solution is I don't use the ticket machines. I go to the desk, you know, and I queue, and I forget where I was going. It was somewhere like Sheffield or somewhere. I can't remember. And I said to the bloke behind the counter, you know, return to Sheffield, please. And he started to work out the cheapest fare, and he tapped away on his computer keyboard for about 7-8 minutes. And then he looked at me rather sorrowfully and said, I think I'm going to have to give up on this. Honestly, the man whose job it was to find out the cheapest fare, the system was so Byzantine that he couldn't actually... He said, I can tell you lots of fares, but I can't promise they're the cheapest. So 10 out of 10 for honesty. But that gives you... an example of how complex it's got. And I did an event in Sussex last year, and they said to me, how did you get down here from London then? And I said, on Southern Rail. And they looked at me, and they didn't believe me. They said, no, really, how did you get down? I said, I got the train. A train? Yeah, it was just the service has been so bad, and it has really disrupted their lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My local train station in Wales, it doesn't have a ticket desk, it doesn't have a ticket machine, it does have a phone number for the Samaritans. And then you look at it and you think, that's a bit harsh.
Yeah.
And then when you get to your destination and you don't have the ticket... and you try to explain to them, then you think, I'm going to need that number.
I think soon they'll be on board Samaritans.
I once got threatened with the police for just that, where I tried to buy a ticket off the machine and the option I needed wasn't available because it was an off-peak train. But the first off-peak train was at 9:15, and when I got on the train, I showed them the ticket and he said, oh, no, this is the wrong thing. We're going to have to find you. And I wouldn't give them my name and address. And then I said, well, I tried to buy the ticket, but it wasn't there. And he said, well, that's because the machine doesn't allow that ticket until 10 o'clock. As if that was a brilliant answer. I mean, just like, it's just like that people don't want us to travel by train. Perhaps that's it. Perhaps they don't want us to travel by train at all.
So you didn't give me a name?
No.
But you just told the story on the radio?
Yeah. Come and get me.
Spot the flaw.
Stoically, this is the news that the government are to force rail companies to simplify the train fare system. One of the plans is to get rid of historic fares, which means it'll no longer cost a bushel of apples to go to Harrogate. Buying overpriced tickets is, of course, one of the great rituals of rail travel, including inexplicably grinding to a halt in the middle of nowhere and seeing how many cans of Stella you can fit in before Reading. The new system will also advise travellers how to get the least expensive meals while travelling, the most economical option being to board, set up camp and then forage for discarded nuts and berries. There are, of course, cards to cheapen your journey, a young person's rail card, a dual traveller's card and, of course, the Six of Spades, which, if it is the card the ticket inspector was thinking of, means you can travel entirely free. Anyway, it's nice to finally cover a story that's relevant to the life of my personal assistant. So, hello, Maureen. The money's on the dresser. I don't know what's upstairs, but please bury it. 2 points to Katie. Lloyd, have a listen to this. You and me, baby, ain't nothing but mammals, so let's do it like they do
on the Discovery Channel. That will have really scared a lot of radio callers.
Lloyd, who's looking for a prime mate?
This is a story about a zoo in the Netherlands that have started giving their female orangutans. I never know how to pronounce it because I always used to say orangutan, and then I watched a documentary with David Attenborough and he calls them orang-utans. And I figure he probably knows. Anyway, they're allowing... You know those ginger monkeys? They're allowing the female orangutan to pick a prospective partner by showing them on, like, a tablet, potentially.
Yeah, they've got a tablet, like an iPad kind of thing, and they hold it up, and then the orangutan gets to choose who they... It's a sort of monkey Tinder.
But I'm worried that the female will just pick, like, famous orangutans.
Yeah.
You know, like that one from the Clint Eastwood films.
Dirty Harry.
Yeah. Isn't it disappointing to discover that orangutans are so shallow? Because they look so wise, don't they? But you shouldn't judge by appearances, which is what the orangutan should not do.
Do you don't think this gives them orangutans to get a chance to sort of know each other properly? Do you think it's encouraging just sort of just shallowness, skin?
I think it's promoting promiscuity in orangutans, which is always keeps me awake at night worrying about that. It's interesting what Wallover was saying about
getting
the
more than me.
About smashing it up, though, because I remember working with baby chimp in a show. And
just when you were in cabaret,
eh? And I was talking to the ape person, and he was saying the difference between the apes is that if you gave a chimpanzee a camera, it will just smash up the camera. Mm. He said if you give a gorilla a camera, it will disassemble the camera piece by piece. He said if you gave an orangutan a camera, it would disassemble the camera piece by piece, and then it would put it back together again. And I've always wanted to go to a zoo and hand an orangutan a camera.
You can tell when an orangutan's happy. You can certainly tell when it's not happy. That's just how it works.
Really?
Yeah, they go, ooh. No.
Do you know what? I'm not a zoologist, Mars, but I've never seen an orangutan go, ooh.
It's because you're always randomly giving them electrical goods to sort out. Look at you, they're too busy trying to work out how to put your Dulux back together. Thank you. All right, just stop. Come on, I'll have a look at the Breville. All right, just stop passing through things with the wire. You need a new ribbon for it. That's what you need. I can't help you. Inadmissibly, this is the news that a Dutch zoo have developed what they call Tinder for orangutans. An 11-year-old orangutan called Zambojo will be given the opportunity to choose one of a number of potential mates using a touchscreen tablet. If she's interested, she'll swipe left. If she's not, she'll mash her own feces into the screen and bite the face of the keeper. It's a dance as old as time itself. Zambojo is an 11-year-old female orangutan, although, as this is the internet, she'll probably turn out to be an obese 55-year-old man. The touchscreen tablets have to be reinforced with steel frames to survive Zambojo's powerful grip. So, good luck to the male orangutan who wins that jackpot. According to The Guardian, the male orangutan could come from as far away as Singapore, which... Whatever way you look at it, that is a hell of a feat. 2 points. 2 points to Lloyd. Susan, what Scottish thing was too short?
A story about the Scottish half marathon. It was very successful. A gentleman called Callum Hawkins set a record time. Everyone was very pleased with the whole situation. Well done. It then transpired that the Scottish half marathon was not indeed a half marathon. It was 150 metres short of being a half marathon. This was due to a combination of the runners going slightly the wrong way and the measurements being taken when there were roadworks on, which were later removed. Now, before anyone does the typical Scottish thing of, oh, did you make it short because you're Scottish and you don't like exercise? It was a company in Newcastle who were in charge, so it's nothing to us. And, you know, to be honest, if anyone has listened to the Proclaimers, well, you'll know that 13.1 miles is nothing compared to how far we Scots will go just to fall down at someone's door. And... it's a shame because Callum Hawkins rose up the rankings, but for the 150 metres, due to a mistake, means that he's had to scrap that record. He's not gone up the rankings, and the Scottish half marathon was not a half marathon.
The thing that confuses me is that the organiser said that people who took part in this race, if they enter next year's race, they'll give him a 50% discount, so then it'll be a quarter marathon.
I love that that is the excuse. The excuse is human error. And I think that it's really nice to hear that as an excuse after something's gone wrong, not, oh, it was a technical glitch or it's the will of the people. I think that's very charming.
Yeah. I thought they used more technical stuff now than just a slightly broken trundle wheel.
Regrettably, this is the sad tale of a half marathon in Scotland, which turned out on closer inspection not to be a half marathon at all because it was 149.7 metres too short. Winning times and personal bests were declared invalid, making this one of 2017's biggest Scottish sporting letdowns in what is already a crowded calendar of disappointment. Some runners posted demands for a refund of the £33 entry fee and were promptly returned £32.50. Incidentally, the difference between a marathon and a half marathon is that in a half marathon, Paula Radcliffe only needs to pause for a brief fart. 1.97 points to Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Katie.
This is sent in by Andrew Johnston and is from The Times. Fiona Hill, Joint Chief of Staff, followed Theresa May into the Home Office, but later resigned after leaking against Michael Gove.
Lloyd.
Danny Everett saw this offer in the Bristol Post. Get two free fitness classes and a free pasty.
Susan.
Matt Parry got this from his local Indian restaurant in York. Let the old saying, love comes from the stomach, be your motto this Valentine's, and spice up your Valentine with true authentic flavours of Indian cuisine. Bring this advert to claim a 15% discount on your bill all this month of February. Not available on 14th February.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Katie have 8, but this week's winners with 10 are Lloyd and Susan. Before we leave you, here is an extract from an interview with the Osmonds, spotted in The Guardian by Moira Crowther.
We recorded the song Crazy Horses at MGM in Hollywood. Alan wrote the lyrics and he said that the music needed to sound like a horse somehow. We tried everything and then we finally found something that sounded like a neighing stallion on Donnie's organ.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Katie Brand, Lloyd Langford and Susan Cowman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by John Hunter, James Kettle and Tom Neenan. With additional material by Sarah Gibbs, Alex Hardy and Jenny LaVille. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.